The Fable and Folly Network supports creators of exceptional audio stories, including the one you're listening to right now. If you love our shows, we want to hear from you. Complete our listener survey at fableandfolly.com/survey. This will help us learn more about you, what you like, what you'd like to hear more of, and how we can maintain an inclusive, safe atmosphere. As a thank you for your participation, we have extras and behind-the-scenes content from your favorite shows. Fans make the network what it is. Thanks for listening, and we can't wait to hear from you. Find our listener survey at fableandfolly.com/survey today.
Welcome back, my kindred, to Blood and Syrup, a Vampire the Masquerade live play podcast. I am Sylvania Dracul, your host through this world of darkness. While Everett, Val, and Evangeline slept, Doris was roughly awoken. Tors, whom Doris recognized from Cleopatra's court, had come to take her to safety and protect her from the Asp Protocol, a kill switch of sorts which was to be activated if the New Haven experiment failed. As Doris is taken to Pritchard's peculiarities, what fate awaits the rest of the coterie? Abandon hope, all ye who listen here.
Evangeline, a snake has disintegrated in your fist. As we've talked about, you've dealt with all manner of dumb wildlife on in your broadcasting career. But in addition to all of the things that I think you understand so far about the world of the Kindred, things like this, things like the wards that you were dealing with, exploding wards, flying people, the sort of enchantments you were under while dealing with the Darza Lilith, all of this was like definitely, like you didn't sign up for any of this, but also no. I think there was a quarter of this that you kind of thought you could understand. Because I mean, one of the things I always love about particularly Vampire as a system is like, it's established that Dracula exists as like a book in the World of Darkness written by Bram Stoker about the Kindred. And the Kindred make jokes about it. Nosferatu is like a movie in the world of, like, you're aware of what a vampire is. It's not like The Walking Dead where there are no zombies and you're just like, oh no, what do you mean? I'm bit. This is probably fine. I'll be cool. But what no one really tells you about is all the other stuff. And particularly given your kind of introduction into the World of Darkness and into the world of the Kindred, odds are you were mostly briefed on that and pretty much nothing else. So I feel like you're getting a lot of new shit. Like, you already didn't like what you bought, and now you're finding out there's a bunch of other features that you also didn't want that are also here. What do you think you do? You can hear a commotion outside. Val has gone tearing off down the hall. You have this snake that is kind of rapidly disintegrating in your hands. How do you react to this? Like, is it, do you react as a deputy? Do you react as the person you were? Do you react as a kid? Or like, what do you think? What does Evangeline do?
I hate to say, like, Evangeline is, I mean, with a little bit of like sleep, her physical shock has worn off, you know? Mm-hmm. But I think there's a bit of an emotional numbness to everything still. Just because it just all happened too fast and just too much. And like, there's too much to process from, you know, the previous day. So I think what she just really wants to get to her dog, who is currently still at the vet's.
Yeah.
And that's it. So, I mean, you know, she'll go out, walk out. I mean, just see, she has to get through the commotion to go anywhere. So she's going to go for that reason, but it's more just of a, I have to deal with this to get to where I want to be.
Okay. Yeah. I think that makes sense. So, I assume you just like stow the snake, like it disintegrates to a point. We talked about things burning through it. But eventually it starts to kind of, I would say like what's left of it is kind of a dried out husk. So there's still some snake there. It seems to be dehydrating almost. Like, mm-hmm. It's not so fragile that like if you it's just going to like shatter, but it also is like there's chunks of it missing. The golden nature of it has kind of faded away. It's very kind of gray and dark, a bit of almost a jerky vibe to it. Like it's,
Are there like any of those like large Ziploc bags? I'm thinking of what they like put like your clothes into that they've had to deal with while you've like been in whatever surgery or whatever, stuff like that.
Totally.
Because I think, like, it's just like all this fucking stuff. And just get that and just stuff the snake in, put it in her pocket.
Okay, great. So I think what we'll say then is like as it's starting to like foam and disintegrate, you toss it in, zip it shut. And you probably like do that thing where you like pat the air out. And it stops once there's not air.
You get
the sense that if you continue to leave it exposed, it would continue to have gotten more and more brittle until it did shatter. Yeah, you see it kind of like it's because you ziplocked it, it's less dry than I just described. It's a little squingy, if you will. Mm. Like there's still a bit of liquid, which you know will be helpful for testing later. But also that has nothing to do with your dog, and your dog is the prime focus here. Pocketing that, you immediately step out into the hall, and you, as Val did, encounter the night nurse. Well, I guess not night nurse. Stella's. I keep thinking of her as a night nurse because she deals with you guys a lot, but ultimately, like, she is the one responsible for the blood bank and for making sure it all runs correctly. Like, there are administrators here, but like Stella's really the one who makes sure the place doesn't completely go off the rails. And as Val also found her, she is on the ground, foaming at the mouth. T-mug broken, signs of fang marks, not like vampire fangs, but like snake fangs, if you will, to use the internet, language of the net, like of Johnny Lee Miller in Hackers. You see some snake bites, on her neck, and she seems to be in really bad shape. Whereas Val tripped over her, acknowledged it, and like ran off. You as someone who is like leaving with a purpose, realize she's like, this almost looks like an overdose. Like this is someone who is in bad, bad, bad shape. But your dog is still out there. You are at your wit's end. And honestly, this kind of isn't your problem. So, Evangeline, you are a character in transition. You are a person dealing with a lot.
You think I'm going to leave a person to die? I'm not going to leave a person to die.
I mean, they are just human.
I'm human, I say to myself.
Fair enough. Yeah, amazing. I love it. So you stop. What would you like to do? Do you want to kind of like try and assess the damage? Do you want to call for help? What's
she like here? Foaming at the mouth, like can't talk kind of thing? Because I would like crouch down and just say like, tell me what to do. Like, what do you need?
So I'll say once you get closer, a good way to think of this is like, this is someone at the tail end of an overdose. So like, in the same way that you guys were, clearly affected by the snakes and the attack, the red cell attack, she was likely hit around the same time as we learned last episode in our cutaway, to Doris's adventure. The difference is she's not Kindred. You guys are. So she likely got hit with the same dose you did of whatever it was. But she's dealing with a mortal body. So once you get down there, it's like bloodshot eyes, like foam, but not like actively foaming or shuddering. She's still alive, but like on the way out. You get the sense.
Okay. Having no idea what to do, I'll run back into her room and like hit whatever button they hit when someone's coding.
Amazing. So you run back in.
Because if that doesn't do anything, then fuck it. Like, fucked anyways.
For sure. And I think I like that that's both like a very much a Laura sentiment and an Evangeline sentiment. Yeah. But the good news is this is a functioning hospital. No. But also like as a player, I've also hit that point where I'm like, look, if this fucking choice doesn't solve it, then I guess I'm going to a funeral. But happily for Evangeline, when you slap the button, sure enough, like alarm sirens start going off. You get the full code, like, flatline thing. Because, happily, the hospital is still functional. And whoever did this...
Oh, shit. Wow.
Didn't... And, I mean, you haven't left the room, really, other than the hallway. So you could fully believe that the whole hospital is, like, toast. Mm-hmm. But, happily, the alarms start going off. At the very least, I think from that moment of frustration, it's like the world may be insane, but at least one fucking thing still works the way it should. And also, there's, I feel like, a slight satisfaction to knowing, like, yes, everything is kind of being torn away, but some systems are still in place and some things still work. So you slap the button and immediately, like, lights go off, alarms start, you feel like there's maybe, just maybe now, some hope for Stella.
I take out the plastic bag and just, like, shove it into the closest person's hand. Be like, just like, it was this. I'm guessing. No one has arrived yet. Then
because
fuck it.
Back in the front lobby, Val, you
no.
You've been hassling dear sweet orderlies. Trying to get some answers.
Yeah.
When suddenly alarms start going off. Immediately, like, medical staff are looking around. The problem is, they're looking at you. And there's some general confusion about what's going on. But as one of the highest authorities, if not the highest authority, just shy of the sheriff in this town, you get the sense the medical professionals aren't sure whether it's you or a medical code somewhere in the hospital that's going on. You're still disoriented. You're still kind of raging.
yeah.
With the alarms and I think the sudden shock of what's going on. Also, like, a messy success isn't like a full bestial anything. It's just mm-hmm, like you mm-hmm. succeeded too hard. The problem with Val is, like, the things she wants to succeed at are so single-minded and driven that when you want it, you really want it. So I guess my question to you is, do you want to try and understand what's happening, or are you still on the warpath to figure out who attacked and where the sheriff went?
I think as there's another interruption and she has a moment to think, she would realize these people don't know anything and be more trying to figure out what is going on or answers in another way. If at first she was just so angry, it was blinding to just yell at everybody. And now it's like, okay, we have to figure out what exactly is going on. And I think she probably would remember that the nurse was also hurt. That just wasn't a priority at that moment.
Yeah. Can I get a composure and investigation from you, please, then?
Yes. Oh, boy.
That's... Which, again, is, I think, just you reckoning with, like, all of these conflicting thoughts and desires while also being full of rage and drive.
Oh, I got 2 successes.
Okay. You come down to earth a bit. I think the one modification I want to make on that is, like, I think you were fully aware that Stella was hurt. It was more like there's a distinct difference between I will avenge you and I can save you. And I think you went with I will avenge you, whereas Evangeline being, you know, one human to another human, like, I can save you.
I object to those air quotes, which, if you're listening, there were big
air quotes.
I put it
in my voice, though. I think you could hear it when I said,
you really could.
Yeah,
humans.
Just saying, you didn't have to put the air quotes in physically.
Excellent. Yeah.
A lot.
I like that you threw them in while saying physically. All right. No. So, Del, yeah, you. Val manages to kind of recognize what's going on, kind of come down to earth a bit. What do you do to kind of help direct the chaos that's around you? Because, like, again, you can see, and I think all of us would be pretty aware of what, like, a massive, like, coding alarm in a hospital would mean. And you can see people looking to you like, are you the problem? Can you direct us to the problem? What do you do?
Yeah, she would realize, since the front of the building looks normal, all these people don't know what's going on, that obviously the biggest problem was in the room they were. Mm-hmm. So she would turn back around away from the light and everything as well, because she can't go any further into that room. She would just turn back around and start stomping back up and be like, follow me. The sheriff is fucking missing. Something's going, and just stomp on. back up to the room, back through the hole in the wall that she made.
There's like a hot second where everyone kind of looks to each other with like a, what do we do? And then one of the doctors, she just leans forward and she's like, honestly, at this point, I don't want to fuck with her. Do any of you? And they all kind of shake their heads. And she's like, all right, let's move the gurney. Let's go see what's up. And then immediately it's just full ER, like just like full rushing down the hall, but like through the hole in the wall, following you as you stalk back in. And then Laura, as you'd established, you know, a bunch of people swarm in. They immediately find Stella. They go to her. You shove the bag into someone's hands.
Yeah. With a kind of like, you need this, right? Right, this like her. I mean, she's not really communicating terribly well, but it's like, you know, this universe's Jack Hanna told her about like using the snake for an antidote or something.
great, yeah. So you shove it into the hands of we'll say the same doctor, and she just kind of looks at it and says, "What is this? A snake? What? No, I don't need this." And she just immediately throws it in a garbage can.
Evangeline goes over and retrieves it and like takes it with her, like, fine. She, I don't know. Right. Useful for something. I guess she doesn't know shit about like medicine, whatever.
Admittedly, you're absolutely correct, but the doctor doesn't understand that the snake has anything to do with the patient. So she just thought you were handing her a bag of gross. But also,
Evangeline isn't in any condition to be worth.
Fully understand that. Also, there's like the nuance of like mortals are just used to Kindred doing weird shit in New Haven all the time and having to just kind of take it at face value. Like, can you imagine like living in a town full of like Malkavians and Nosferatu and you're just like, this is fine. You're eating your own skin? Sure. Probably fine. You're yelling at that phone? Great. Probably fine. It shouldn't have insulted your mother. Like, I think they're just like, great, that's her thing. But also, I fully appreciate that Evangeline doesn't take it that way. She takes it as them just being idiots about it. I love it. So, yeah, you go back and retrieve the snake, which is good because I feel like Val would have murdered you later if you'd thrown out, like, key evidence. Val, you have a moment to catch up with Evangeline. Is there anything you say to her, or are you just kind of like directing the chaos or looking for clues about where the sheriff went?
I think looking for clues, and she would stomp around a bit and then come back to Evangeline like, did you see anything? Do you remember anything?
And I just hold up the snake. Like, I don't know, this is it.
Dead snake?
Val, you do remember the snake rolling across your back. Like, you've dealt with this. You've seen the snake before.
She threw that snake.
Surely did.
we remember throwing that snake, but not why it was there. Why the fuck does a snake have to do with it? And where the fuck is Doris?
And slowly you both look to the blood-stained bed that you remember Doris being asleep on. But it is clearly disheveled and now distinctly lacking in one Doris. Speaking of alarms and loud noises, Everett, you punched through the side of a helicopter, which, I mean, I may be no aviator. I'm no Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yeah.
But, you
Speaking
know,
punching Malkavians, I punch a helicopter.
Yeah, exactly. And the helicopter says, I don't know much about flying helicopters, but I'm pretty sure putting a hole in one doesn't help. And this is a bit of a weird, messy successy that I want to spend a hot second on before we go forward. I think this is born of your – so much shit went down in Montreal before you came to New Haven. The Red Cell connection is bad. And honestly, anything related to Montreal here is bad. You, Ridley, and Iris barely survived anything. And like Iris kind of communed with a demon, and Ridley is the scariest thing you've ever met. And if they barely got through, this town full of people that you've been entrusted with have so little chance that I think, honestly, it's just a combination of frustration, hunger, the beast, all of it, that in realizing that, you punch through. Again, want to be clear, you're not in a bestial state, just you're in a state of horrific realization. And also, you said you punched a hole in the wall, and it was very funny. So that's just what we're doing.
Oh, hello. I didn't see you there. It's me, Tyler Hewitt. I normally play Everett Fry, but today I'm playing the role of guy who will talk to you about Patreon. That's right. Dum Dums and Dice has a Patreon. If you go to patreon.com/dumdumdice, you can support us at a number of different levels. For example, for $25 a month, you get your name added in the special thank yous at the end of every episode. And you get to create an NPC of your own that will join the cast of Dum Dums and Dragons, or Blood and Syrup, or the Valentine Heresy in their adventures. You don't have to be bitten by a vampire to be immortalized, okay? It can be so much simpler. Patreon.com/dumdumdice, DUMBDUMBDICE. Okay? Memorize it, type it, click it. The clicking part is subscribing. All right, you got this.
Everett, you, with this horrible realization washing over you, and I think as a guy who's pretty done with conspiracies, just like one more fucking thing on the stack. You've got like, you know, the Lilith connection going on. You still got unsolved mysteries around, you know, like vamp and other shit. It's just too much. So fist flies out, you punch a hole, and immediately all of the Red Cell guys in the chopper jump into action. The guy you've been talking to just throws up his hands and he's like, whoa, hey, you got to calm down. You got to calm down. And to his right, the lady who'd been clearly like less comfortable with this whole situation, as the helicopter begins to like list and spin a bit as the, you know, stuff's being sucked out through the hole. It's not a huge hole, but it's enough to depressurize the cabin. She just says, fuck this, sir. It's not worth it. And she draws her pistol and aims it at you. What do you do?
Well, I think with putting my fist through the hull of a helicopter, I don't know if hull is the right word, but
I mean, I already established I'm no aviator like Leonardo DiCaprio in the film Catch Me If You Can.
yeah. I'm no Calvin Candy, but
this is just a long ad for my performance in the Valentine Heresy season 2. Go check it out, folks.
But as soon as the helicopter starts like reacting to my physical outburst, I think, as with every, I think, like bestial outburst, the regret that sets in almost immediately afterwards, I think is very real and very apparent. And so I think, Everett kind of, gaining control over his faculties once again, it knows that he's like no good in a knockdown dragout fight. So the hands come up and he tries to look as non-threatening as possible. As I think all he can do in the face of people drawing down on him.
Great. She pulls the trigger. The man who's trying to, like the commander, who is desperately trying to keep this whole thing from going completely pear-shaped, Coste, he just has a moment of like, no, he's the asset, and he throws his hand out as she pulls the trigger and just fucking slaps the gun away. The bullet goes wide, but Everett, you have one of those moments of like, I think this, in all of our adventures so far, I think this is probably the first time where the I'm putting up my hands and like I surrender gambit hasn't actually paid off. And I think it's not like, I think a horrible realization or anything. It's just one of those moments where it's like, oh yeah, sometimes that the cost of that is getting shot in the head.
It hasn't happened to me before.
It has, but not for this reason. Coste knocks the gun away. You hear just that like, even with, the air, you know, howling out of the side of the thing, you're wearing your helmet still. Everyone's got helmets on. But you can still hear it. The gunshot is still deafening. And you hear a shatter of glass. Looking forward into the cabin, you can see that the back of the pilot's head has been blasted out. His brains, pieces of his face, and other viscera are now sprayed across a broken cockpit canopy. The chopper was tilting a bit. Now all of those beautiful sound effects we hear in movies are going as just like altitude alarms, everything start going off. The co-pilot rapidly starts like reaching across. The woman with the gun just like snarls at Coste and is trying to bring it back around on you. What do you do?
I think I'm about to die.
Mm-hmm.
I think if I survive the crash, I'll be immolated as radioactive daylight just sets me ablaze. I think if I do nothing, I'll probably get shot and then die in the crash or die in the aftermath of the crash. And I think I haven't been this hungry in a very, very long time. So I think I'm just going to go out scratching that itch, and I go for the woman who's trying to draw down on me again.
Holy shit. All right, bud. I'm going to need I think we're going with probably strength and brawl, maybe dexterity and brawl, depending on how do you think you lunge at her? Like, what's the attack pattern here? I don't think I've ever heard you describe trying to feed in these specific terms before, and I'm really curious about this, because this really seems like a, well, fuck it. And I'm curious what Everett's oh, fuck it moment looks like, because I've definitely seen some other characters. is this tactical enough, or is it like full, yeah, instinct?
The helmet has to come off, so there's one hand drawing the helmet off of my own head, and the other hand, I think, has to help manage the weapon that she's trying to pull at me. So she's being partly restrained by Coste, I believe.
Rodolphe Coste is the commander on the mission. He did like a Jackie Chan or John Wick, where he just like palmed it away. So he didn't restrain her, just gun came over, and he literally just like slapped the side of the gun in her hand to send it wide, which is unfortunately why the pilot got shot, because like if he had control of her hand or the gun, he could have done something, but instead it was just a, like, you know, from hands up, like, hey, 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 just calm down, to knocking someone's almost reflex, slapping it is easy, but it means she is unrestrained. She is swinging it back around. So no, you're, it's literally you versus her. There's no other person kind of involved.
There's no other external factors other than a crashing helicopter?
Crashing helicopter, air being sucked to the side. Coste is there, but I think the moment of slapping the gun away and watching the bullet go, like, everything just went to shit. So he is clearly kind of a little bit shell-shocked. But for you, it doesn't matter, because you've just decided to eat no matter what goes down. So it's just basically like you and her in a helicopter that's beginning to list and spin.
Yeah, so in one hand to take the helmet off, the other hand to manage her weapon. And then I close the distance. And after I've taken the helmet off, that free hand is going to try and steady her. If she's wearing a helmet or something like that,
yeah.
I use that to kind of like jerk her head to free up the neck.
Understood. Okay, so with that in mind,
I'm losing my shit here.
And Dell apparently like very much approves.
Yeah,
it's
I'm
like
here
two
for this.
Different places on the spectrum.
Yeah, somewhere Ridley is rock hard and doesn't understand why. He's just like, all right. So Tyler, for this then, I'm gonna need because I want to deal with this first action of like getting into position to eat, and then we'll deal with the eating. So let's go with dexterity, please. And I'd give you either melee or brawl. You're not directly attacking her, but I also don't really think there's another thing here that applies as well to the idea of, like, again, just that like, you know, Aikido maneuver of like helmet, gun, face.
Yep. I'll take the brawl, because I get 1 point when I'm brawling with Kindred, which I think applies here. So I'm rolling three dice, all of which are hunger dice. Let's see what happens.
Oh, good God.
I don't know if I even have enough to get, like, I don't know if even like three successes would do it. It's one success.
Hmm. Okay. All right. So I rolled her counter roll, and it's also bad. I'll give you the helmet or the gun. Which one do you take? In terms of like things you can control.
The gun, I guess. Yeah.
Okay. So you're now locked in basically like you've got, so you can't get, you're trying to wrench the helmet and like she's got a chin strap. So just like it pulls and you hear just like, ow, fuck, as you crank it back. And I think you do it a few times. It's one of those things where like you had a clear idea in your head of what this could be. So you crank it at that. You're controlling the gun. So the gun is away from you. She's still cranking the trigger. She hits the co-pilot in the shoulder. You hear Coste.
Whoops.
It doesn't matter. The cockpit window was gone. Like the whole, like the chopper is going down. But like you hear sparks blast. You just hear Coste yelling, fuck, 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 as he kind of moves in. The other Red Sail operative is just like pressed against the side of the chopper. You're actually kind of shocked that over your, and this adds like a really unfortunate for you, I think, underpinning to all this. It's like, this is all chaotic and horrible enough. But they're just like, they're speaking Latin prayers over and over and over and over again. And you realize that like for some kindred, you know, religion just still kind of hangs out. And obviously with antediluvians and everything else, it's kind of hard to get away from it. But it just means you're getting an exhausting litany of like essentially someone counting prayer beads. And just or a rosary and just like running through stuff that'll make them feel better, which is just coming through your ear mic as they mutter it while like clutching the side of the ship. Now the hole is tearing wider the door starts to like just kind of creak and break and it's kind of not flapping because it's not a fucking, you know, it's a sliding door, obviously, because it's a helicopter. Yeah. But it's starting to creak on its hinges, sliding back and forth, almost like a train door. Okay. On an incline. And you're now locked in sort of a melee grappling match with this female combatant. Agent Laurent is her name. So you and Laurent are like gun, you're going for her head, you're cranking the helmet, she's firing. She's going to attempt fuck, this is such a bad position to try and fight someone from. I think she's going to let's do a round to see if she can break out of your grapple.
I mean, she's got to be better at hand-to-hand than I am. I am. I'm pretty fragile.
I mean,
I'm betting she does this, which, yeah, good for her.
Here's the problem. She's part of like a mercenary company that has guns. So the odds of her being great at hand-to-hand as a kindred with a gun, actually not high. Okay. Plus she's sitting down in a helicopter that's spinning. So let's see. All right. So Tyler, from you, I'm going to need, this is going to be an opposed role. You against her, locked in this combat. Strength and brawl, I think. Okay. Unless I'll let you make a case for dexterity, but you got to tell me what you're trying to do with it.
It's the same stat between strength and dex.
Which one would you prefer? Is
strength
is,
at this point. Maybe dex to initiate this grapple, but strength now to like hold it and maintain it and overpower her.
Yeah. I like that. Sure. Great. Let's dance.
Two successes for me.
Okay. You hear Coste just yelling, stand down, Laurent, stand down, as the chopper begins to fully rotate. You have a brief inception moment as everyone in the cabin begins to kind of fold, except the guy who's clutching, and you can see him like denting the metal as he kind of like speaks his prayers. You're briefly weightless. However, I ruled so tremendously badly for Laurent that you crank the helmet off of her and sink your teeth into her throat. At which point, Coste just yells, fuck it! And he boots the two of you as hard as he can. And you feel a crunch of metal behind your back with your teeth drawing the vitae out of Agent Laurent. The two of you spiral out of the chopper into free fall. And as the two of you spiral and spin, Everett, you can barely see because the enraptured feeling of freely draining another kindred is just such a fucking delight. You've been so hungry for so long. And no one is going to be able to see what you're doing. No one will witness this shame. And you can finally just feed the beast. You see beneath you a sea of green trees. You see mountains. And you see several other helicopters as you and your prey plummet to Earth.
This episode of Blood and Syrup features the voices of Tyler Hewitt at Tyler_Hewitt on Twitter, Claire Blackwood at Claire Blackwood on Twitter, Del Borvik at Deltastic on Twitter, Laurie Elizabeth at EL Hamstring on Twitter, and storyteller Tom McGee at McGeeTD on Twitter. This episode was edited and mixed by Laura Hemstra, and our show logo was created by Decapitated Markers at Decapitated Marker on Twitter. That's MRKR. Our theme songs are What's Really Going On Right Now by Chase Allen Willis and Traffic by Kai Engel, and our ads use the tracks No Control and Chiefs by Jazzar, J-A-H-Z-Z-A-R. All of their music is available at freemusicarchive.org. When it comes to Dum Dums and Dice, you can visit our website at dumdumdice.com, our Twitter and Instagram at dumdumdice, and on Facebook at facebook.com/dumdumdice. We also have merchandise available at redbubble.com/people/dumdumdice. And most importantly, you can join our Patreon at patreon.com/dumdumdice. That's D-U-M-B-D-U-M-B-D-I-C-E. Sleep well, my kindred. Sleep well in this world of darkness.
Dum Dums and Dice has to give a special thank you to the supreme beings of our Patreon at this time. The Half-Blind Prophet, Christopher Little, Sue One, George Dolby, Lord Obradovic, Orion Birchfield, Scott Garland, Benjamin V, Gavin and Abby McDonald, Cade Peters, Richard Cranium, Anna Zed, Logan, Fire Unfriendly, Acrix, Grandma Likes D&D, Alan, Austin Nut Powers Fry, Stabby Stranger, Roman Brown, and Jill and Noel LaPlante. If you want your name to be added to this list, you can join our Patreon too at patreon.com/dumdumdice. Thanks to them, and a little bit of thanks to you.
The Fable and Folly Network, where fiction producers flourish.